Sun's Weekend All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 1st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off in Cameroon, where the field is set for Wednesday's semifinals at the African Nations Championship Football Tournament, or CHAN. Our VOA football fans will remember CHAN is for African players who ply their trade in their domestic leagues. In the first semifinal Wednesday, Mali will meet Guinea in Douala, Cameroon, and that will be followed by a match between host Cameroon and defending CHAN champion Morocco in Limbe. The winners will advance to the final on February 7th in Yaoundé, Cameroon. Joining us now with a CHAN report is Samson Omale.
Defending CHAN champions, Atlas Lions of Morocco went through to the semifinals on Sunday after a convincing 3-1 win against a 10-man Zambian side. Zambia were reduced by one player after Zakaria Chinungushi was sent off for a bad foul on Abdillah Hafidi after 20 minutes of play. Morocco will now face host Cameroon at the semifinal stage on February the 3rd at the Limbe Omini Sports Stadium. Host Cameroon had earlier on Saturday qualified for the semifinal after beating two-time winners DR Congo 2-1 on Saturday night. The Indomitable Lions came back from a goal down to win the quarterfinal match at the iconic Japoma Stadium in Douala to the delight of the home fans. The result means Cameroon will face Morocco in Wednesday's semifinal at the Limbe Stadium. Lawrence Nikede is a Cameroonian sports journalist based in Yaoundé. I asked him to share his thoughts on the semifinal pairings between Morocco and Cameroon.
The semifinal pairing between Cameroon and Morocco is a perfect one because we have the host nation versus the title holder. I mean, Cameroon is going to base itself on its fighting spirit, on its resilience, and Morocco on its technicality. These are two nations that are going to fight for a place in the finals.
Meanwhile, the Eagles of Mali stopped Congo in penalties to storm into the semifinal after a goalless draw in 120 minutes of regulation and extra time. Mali was sharper in penalties, winning 5-4 at the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium in Yaoundé. It is the second time Mali will be getting to the semifinal stage of a CHAN tournament after finishing as runner-ups in 2016. The fourth and final team to go through were Guinea, that defeated Rwanda 1-0 in the match. We saw both sides finish with 10 men at the Limbe Stadium. Guinea will face neighbors Mali on Wednesday as both sides jostle for a spot in the finals. Once again, Cameroonian-based sports journalist Lawrence Nikede describes the Guinea and Mali's match as a West African derby that will be too close to call.
It will be all West African derby between two nations who are technically very good at the ball. Mali had to suffer to go right through the penalty shootouts in order to qualify for the semifinals, while Guinea edged its opponent Rwanda 1-0 to book its ticket for the semis. So this encounter is an all West African derby, and it's very difficult to predict.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Dear respected friends, sports greetings. This is Milutin Mitchell-Sredovic, coach of Zambia national football team Chipolo Polo and former national coach of Uganda Cranes. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. With more on Guinea's 1-0 victory against Rwanda in the quarterfinals of the CHAN tournament, here is Magume Davis Rakawinge.
The last quarterfinal match of the day was marred by drama and controversy after one player each was red-carded for the game to end 10 men apiece. Guinea midfielder More Kante was the first culprit when he was shown a red card on the 15th minute of the game after a harsh foul on Rwandan captain Jacques Tuyisenge, forcing the Rwandan captain out of the game. Amavubi, with one man advantage, came closest to squaring with the first half substitute and Sujila's header hitting the crossbar. but the Guineans also kept pressing. With an hour played, Rwanda's experienced goalkeeper, Olivier Kwizera, was also sent off after a very dimmed foul on Guinea forward and Mola Isila scoring on the resulting free kick in what proved to be the winner. Vincent Mashami, the Amavubi coach, said after the game that losing experienced captain Jacques Tuyisenge and Rashid Kalisa in the early minutes of the game hugely affected his team performance.
The players were very affected with losing the captain, but of course we had to come back very early, and we continue to push on. We continue to try and create some chances. We continue to play our game against a very good side. I think the two substitutions really destroyed each and everything we had planned today.
But he said the best team of the day lost.
I still believe in my team. We had the best team, but of course I have to say congratulations to Guinea in the national team, because I think they played very well. They were very aggressive. They took their chances, we didn't take our chances. It was a very complicated game. We could have taken the lead, but unfortunately, we never took our one or two chances that we got. But for them, I think they utilized their free kick, and then it was in. I think it was well taken by a very good player.
On the other hand, Guinea coach Kamfore Mohamed Bangoura praised his team for the fighting spirit. Speaking in French, Bangoura said he had to make quick decisions to win the game.
We played with a numeric inferiority. We changed the strategy and tactics. I brought in Motlaye and Kompasa as the holding midfielders, one on the left side to contain them, another one on the right. I asked him to attack, and we asked Ombasa to go forward.
Defending champions, Morocco, was another team to book a place at this year's CHAN semifinals after thrashing Zambia's Chaporoporo 3-1. For the Sunday Side of Sports, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Prince Nesta joins us now with a look at the weekend highlights in the major European club football leagues. And Prince says an Egypt and Liverpool star tops his report. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny. Egyptian playmaker Mo Salah scored twice in Liverpool's 3-1 win over West Ham United at the London Stadium. The 28-year-old scored for the first time in 7 Premier League games, becoming the first player to score 20-plus goals in all competitions in 4 consecutive seasons for Liverpool, since Ian Rush did so 6 times, running from the 1981 to 1982 season to the 1986-1987 season. Salah has now scored 9 Premier League goals against West Ham, his best return against a side in the competition. Firmino came off the bench to set up Jorginho Wijnaldum for a slick Liverpool card before Craig Dawson steered home a corner to hand West Ham a consolation. Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp expressed delight with his side's performance.
Just incredible. So the pass from Shaq was outstanding. The first touch from Mo is from a different planet. I have to say it was really great. And the finishing as well, just class. Like the first goal as well. That's a typical Mo Salah goal. I mean, we scored now the goal against Tottenham, which didn't count, I know. But like a proper finish. And this one, using the formation, full box, goalie can't see it, chip it in the far corner. Super smart goal. And the third one, nice. One and twos, a bigger area to a smaller area, and then Bobby with an unbelievable, unselfish moment and pass the ball square. And Gini deserves to go at the game he played. So, really good.
There was Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp after his team's convincing win against West Ham. The Reds move up to third with 40 points and will welcome Brighton on Wednesday before welcoming league leaders Manchester City to Anfield on Sunday. And talking about Manchester City, the Citizens consolidated their win at the top of the Premier League as Gabriel Jesus sealed a 1-0 win over Sheffield United. City's rock-solid defense nailed down the points with a 5th successive league clean sheet. Their winning run is now up to 12 matches in all competitions, and they're unbeaten in 19 games since losing to Tottenham in November. Leicester City lost at home to Leeds United by a score of 3-1 at the King Power, while Manchester Manchester United drop points for the third time in four Premier League games after securing a goalless draw against an understrength Arsenal side at Emirates Stadium. This was the first goalless draw between Arsenal and Manchester United in the Premier League since February 2014. The Gunners will look to continue their recent good run of form in the Premier League when they take on Wolverhampton Wanderers on Tuesday, while Manchester United host Southampton at Old Trafford. Emphatic finishes from Cesar's Piliqueta and Marcus Alonso gave Thomas Tuchel his first victory as Chelsea defeated a below-par Burnley 2-0. Chelsea's boss Thomas Tuchel was pleased with the impressive display.
Was always active defending. We never got passive. The two guys on the sides did a lot of effort to support. The three up front did a lot of effort to not allow to be too precise for Burnley. And for that, we managed to only concede one shot, which was absolutely amazing. At the same time, we never lost patience with the ball. We controlled the game. We created a lot of chances. We put the game up high on the pitch. We had a very good counter-pressing. For me, so many good things on the pitch out there. And for that, I'm very happy that we got this well-deserved win.
There's Chelsea's new manager, Thomas Tuchel, reflecting on his side's match against Burnley. The Blues have now claimed four consecutive wins in all competitions against Burnley for the first time since December 1982. Chelsea are now 7th with 33 points, while Burnley now lies 16th with 22 points. Chelsea visit Tottenham, which is managed by their former manager Jose Mourinho, on Thursday, while Burnley welcome Pep Guardiola's league leaders Manchester City to Turf Moor on Wednesday. Moving on to the French League, Super Eagles winger Samuel Kalou scored his third league goal of the season for Bordeaux in their 2-1 defeat to Lyon at the Groupama Stadium. Lyon went in front through Cameroonian international Toko Ekambi in the 32nd minute after capitalizing on poor defending from Bordeaux. Kalou then leveled proceedings in the 55th minute with a spectacular goal before Leo Dubois scored the match-winning goal at the death after receiving a timely assist from Maxwell Cornet. Brazilian superstar Neymar converted a penalty in each half, but Paris Saint-Germain collapsed to a sensational 3-2 defeat at relegation-threatened Lorient. Mauricio Pochettino's first loss as head coach means PSG miss out on the chance to return to the top of the French league in place of Lyon, after Nigerian attacker Terry Murphy broke clear to net a stoppage time winner. Youssouf Yazici scored the only goal of the game to help Lille get a 1-0 win over Dijon and go top of the French league table, while Monaco strengthened their grip on fourth place with their fifth win on the bounce, with Guillermo Maripan and Kevin Volland securing a 2-0 victory over Nantes. Six-time Ballon d'Or winner Lionel Messi showed his worth yet again, scoring on a beautiful free kick to lead Barcelona to a 2-1 win over Athletic Bilbao in the Spanish league. Antoine Griezmann also scored for Barcelona, which won its fifth in a row in the league and moved into second place for the first time this season. Barca has the same 40 points as Real Madrid, who had Eder Militao sent off in a 2-1 defeat by Levante on Saturday. Militao was shown a red card in the 9th minute at the Alfredo Di Stefano Stadium, with his team already without their injured captain Sergio Ramos and COVID-stricken coach Zidane. Marco Asensio gave Madrid the lead 4 minutes later, but Jose Luis Morales equalized close to halftime before Roger Marti made up for missing a penalty by scoring the winner. Atletico Madrid are now 10 points clear at the top of La Liga after extending their winning run with a 4-2 victory at Cadiz that saw Luis Suarez score a brace. Diego Simeone's men opened the scoring via Suarez's fine 28th-minute free kick, and after that was cancelled out by an Alvaro Negredo effort before Saul Niguez put Atletico back in front shortly before the break. Finally, Zlatan Ibrahimovic missed a penalty, but AC Milan won 2-1 at Bologna on Saturday to bounce back from a disappointing week and remain top of Serie A. Ante Rebic fired home the rebound after Ibrahimovic's penalty kick was saved, and Ivorian midfielder Frank Kessie doubled Milan's lead early in the second half. Former Milan midfielder Andrea Poli reduced the deficit 9 minutes from time. Belgian forward of Congolese descent Romelu Lukaku also scored twice as his side thrashed Benevento 4-0 at the San Siro, while Juventus beat Claudio Ranieri's Sampdoria 2-0 with goals from Italy international Federico Chiesa and Welsh midfielder Aaron Ramsey sealing the deal for Andrea Pirlo's men. I'm Prince Nesta on the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
A visually impaired Ghanaian man is hoping to compete in judo at this year's Paralympics in Tokyo, Japan. Yao Afusu-Larbi joins us now from Accra, Ghana. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sunny.
You know, this is the first time with the visually impaired involve ourselves in this judo team. And this is the first time from Ghana. So I wish I'll take this to the top and raise the name of Ghana high.
This is the wish of visually impaired judoka Nikwe Brown. Ni is 42 years old and has set his sights on becoming Ghana's first gold medalist at the Paralympic Games this year. Judo is categorized as a modern martial arts, which has since evolved into a combat and Olympic sports. At training, Brown uses sounds with numbers to learn what to do.
One, two.
Brown lost his eyesight when he was 4. As a toddler who was still trying to find his feet, he has had to battle through life's constant impediments until he found judo.
Financial support. Because I trained 3 times a week. And the TLO is a 90 series to 100 series a week. So imagine, in a month, 400. Before, people think, if you are visually impaired or you're a person with disability, you can't do anything. So I'm doing this for people to know that you can do something.
Judo's most important feature is its competitive element, where the objective is to either throw or take down an opponent. Ezekiel Nidakododu has trained Brown for a few months and believes his new client has it.
For me, I would say he's a very determined person because he's been into sports already, but just switching to judo. So it's in the blood. Yeah, he loves sports. If financially, government, individuals are assisting, he can get to the Olympic Games.
Brown lives in Nima, a slum community in the Greater Accra region of Ghana. He is determined. Each morning, he trots out of his house and walks through the ghetto alone to the roadside in search of transportation to the Accra Sports Stadium, where he trains.
As I reach here, if I'm looking for a taxi, then I have to tell somebody to stop a taxi for me. But if I want to go by trotro, then I have to walk to the station. As visually impaired, I use a white cane. This is what we call a white cane. So we use this for direction.
At the Commonwealth Games in 2014, judoka Razak Abugri won the bronze medal in the men's minus 60 kg for Ghana, qualifying a visually impaired person to the 2021 Paralympic Games will be a hard feat, but Brown is determined to make the cut, get on the plane, and make Ghana proud in Tokyo. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yao Fusilabi in Accra.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to Ndumbulu and Makosa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. On the tennis beat, Reigning French Open champion Iga Swiatek is one of the players warming up for next week's Australian Open in Melbourne. Craig Gabriel caught up with the 19-year-old Polish player and asked her, "How anxious are you to get on court and play a match again?"
Well, I'm not anxious. I'm mostly excited. And basically, I have like some kind of amount of stress, but it's normal amount. And I don't feel like more pressure than for French Open. Actually, I'm more kind of confident that I can play good tennis, but it all depends on my preparation and on my attitude. So basically, I'm trying to keep my expectations low, even though I did a really good preseason. And I'm just, yeah, waiting for a tournament to start. And actually, I've practiced for so long that mostly I'm excited and not anxious.
How long did it take you to come down from that cloud after Roland Garros?
I wouldn't say that I was in the cloud, but my life changed and I had many more obligations, and it was hard to rest after French Open, and I always need rest after Grand Slam. It doesn't matter if I want it or not, but it's intense 2 weeks, and when we came back to Warsaw, it was even more intense. So I needed, like, I don't know, probably 1 month to fully focus on preparing for next season. But it was the last tournament of the season, and I had a lot of time, so we didn't rush it, you know. And also, really, I don't think I would describe that the whole situation as being on a cloud. So, yeah.
You say your life changed, and it's obvious it would have changed, and you've got more obligations. What are some of those obligations? And now when you're walking down the streets at home or in Warsaw or wherever, is it constant recognition?
It isn't constant. Well, actually, a few days ago when we were walking, yesterday, because we went out of the quarantine 2 days ago, when we were walking for breakfast, one person, he realized that I'm a tennis player and he wanted a photo, but he was from Poland. So usually when I get recognized, it's from people from Poland, even though I'm in a different place. And it isn't constant. It's like really, it's not bothering. It's really nice. And in Poland, it's more often, but I'm really happy about it. So it's not like a problem for me. And about the other obligations, well, obviously I have more media obligations. And right now, I feel like there are more eyes on me, you know, so sometimes I have to just, change my planning or change my, preparation for the tournament, because I know I'm going to have more stuff to do. But, well, it's not, like, something new for me, because even though I didn't have, like, many tournaments that I won before, it was kind of step by step since I was, 14, so it's okay for me.
You won the last major that was played, and what does that do for you coming into the Australian Open? Does that put more pressure on you? Does it take pressure off you?
I wouldn't say it takes off pressure, and I wouldn't say I have more pressure. It's kind of like the same. It's constant. It only depends. It depends on how I approach these things, so I try to, as I said before, keep my expectations low and just keep doing what I did, because it works. And
where have you got the French Open trophy sitting?
It's in the same place as any other trophy. It's in my room in my house. I mean, not my house, my dad's house. It's not really a special place. I don't have a museum with all my trophies, so.
That's Polish tennis player Iga Swiatek, the reigning French Open champion. And Iga was talking with Craig Gabriel in Melbourne, Australia.
Hi, I'm Francis Tiafoe. You're listening to Sunnyside of Sports on Voice of America.
With the COVID-19 pandemic still limiting crowds at sports events all over the world, what will attendance be like at next week's Australian Open tennis tournament? Well, my VOA colleague Gwen Uden has some insights for us. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Over the weekend, some of the biggest stars in tennis took part in the first of a series of warm-up tournaments in Adelaide, Australia, ahead of their first Grand Slam of the year. And they competed in front of thousands of mostly maskless fans. A welcome scene for athletes like American former world number one Andy Roddick, who tweeted, "It makes my heart full seeing fans in the stands. Well done, Australia." And on their official Twitter page, the Australian Open simply wrote, "Tennis is back." On Saturday, Victoria State Sports Minister Martin Pagula announced fans will also be allowed to gather at Melbourne Park for the Australian Open. And he told the press he's received approval to accommodate 50% capacity at Rod Laver Arena, with a reduction at the start of the quarterfinals.
We're really pleased today to announce that over the first 8 days of the Australian Open, the crowd capacity here will be 30,000 per day across day and night sessions. And for the final 6 days, 25,000 per day. And that'll mean 12,500 for the day session and 12,500 for the night session. And that means on Rod Laver Arena, as we get towards the end of the tournament, we'll have an incredible atmosphere.
World number one Serbian Novak Djokovic initially pulled out of his Friday exhibition match against Italian Jannik Sinner, citing blisters on his right hand. But he reversed his decision at the start of the second set to pull out a victory. Afterwards, the eight-time Australian Open champion called Melbourne a second home and said he's eager to play in front of thousands of fans at the upcoming tournament.
It feels like ages, you know, playing without fans. And hopefully this is all temporary and that, you know, we will be able to experience everywhere we go, you know, the fact of playing in front of the fans, not just here in Australia.
On the women's side, Australian Open champion Naomi Osaka lost in a three-set tiebreaker against seven-times Open champion Serena Williams. Afterwards, Osaka commended tournament officials for keeping athletes safe during the current health crisis and admitted she'll need to work on her focus as well as her game ahead of next week.
I think I get distracted by the crowd sometimes because I want to like show off a little bit. So I do some crazy shots and most of the time I miss. So I would say I definitely love having a crowd watching. And I feel like you sort of interact with them. Sometimes they shout things and it makes you laugh. Yeah, I would say I definitely have to focus more though.
And while the Australian Open may not be at full capacity, Martin Pagula says the inclusion of fans points to the significance of Tennis Australia's ability to reduce the spread of the virus.
Over the 14 days, we'll have up to 390,000 people here at Melbourne Park, and that's about 50% of the average over the last 3 years. So, you know, it will not be the same as the last few years, but it will be the most significant international event with crowds that the world has seen for many, many months.
More than 1,000 players and their entourages had to undergo 14 days of quarantine upon their arrival in Australia. Of those, 72 players remained in strict lockdown for coming into close contact with passengers who tested positive for COVID-19. Well, it's been confirmed that those players have been released from hotel quarantine, and many of them took to social media to tell the world they are finally free. The Australian Open, the first tennis tournament of 2021, is set to begin on February 8th in Melbourne, Australia. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Finally, Gwen and I would be remiss if we didn't wish our employer, the Voice of America, a happy 79th birthday. On February 1st, 1942, announcer William Harlan Hale opened a VOA German language program with these words: "We bring you voices from America today and daily from now on. The news may be good for us, the news may be bad, but we shall tell you the truth." And
that wraps up the February 1st edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.